I'm Bridie Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, is what's happening to West Coast economies intentional or is it incompetence plus? Seattle Mayor Katie Wilson, the gift that keeps on giving. And happy Press Freedom Day, unless, of course, you're an independent journalist in Washington State. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. We are still running our once yearly promo. Take advantage of it before you run out of time. If you go to patreon.com/undivided, that's patreon.com/undivided, and you can use the promo code USA30 for 30% off an entire year of Undivided. Hello, friends, and welcome to Undivided on this Monday. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. A big welcome to all our newest paid subscribers taking advantage of that promo code before it's too late. Oh, I've been thinking a lot over the weekend about what the heck is happening on the West Coast of the United States. You know, is it intentional? Is it incompetence? It feels like someone is intentionally trying to destroy the economies of states like Washington and California, because I mean, you do have a lot of incompetence, and we'll get to this debate later on in the show, but it's so bad that it's like the only reasonable explanation is that it's being done intentionally to, I don't know, grow the size of government, increase our dependence on government. The clip that keeps replaying in my mind, the clip seen around the world of Seattle socialist mayor Katie Wilson waving goodbye to the future of her city's economy.
I think the claims that millionaires are going to leave our state are like super overblown. And if, you know, the ones that leave, like, bye.
I mean, the headlines continue to pour in about that one simple gesture, to not understand the fact that you're waving goodbye to the tax base that is going to pay for all this quote unquote free stuff that you want for other people in the city. It makes no sense. Now, with Katie Wilson, we can chalk a lot of that up to inexperience. Some of it up to inexperience. The fact that even if she thinks that, she doesn't know better than to not say it out loud, and the fact that she's going to be so roundly criticized for it. But as I said on the show on Thursday, it's not just Katie Wilson. You know, we could look at this, and I wish it was just this one-off 44-year-old with no real-life experience, nepotism baby of New York academics, who somehow became the mayor of a major city, and it's just this, like, one-off that we just have to live with for 4 years. But, of course, it's not a one-off. We have Mamdani in New York City, the leader in the L.A. mayor race is a socialist, and we have people with actual experience that on paper were very qualified for their jobs that are doing stuff and saying stuff that's just as unserious as that, like Bob Ferguson. I mean, the man was for 20 years padding his resume to become the governor one day. But he's no less unserious. He might be slightly more polished than Katie Wilson. He might know not to wave goodbye to fleeing millionaires and businesses, but his policies are just as bad. So what's going on here? So I was reminded of, and I've been thinking about this honestly a lot since January when I first saw it, and I don't know why it took me so long to sort of talk about it, but I was at the Roanoke Conference at the end of January, which is like a conference out on the coast for center-right Republicans and conservatives and fiscal conservatives. And there were two leaders in the business community who were talking about overregulation and some of the what's contributing to the bad business climate. And there was one slide they showed, and I went back and asked them. I said, hey, can I get this PowerPoint slide that you showed people at the Roanoke Conference? And this is it. Private sector job experience. This is a big factor in what's happening right now in blue states. So they did, you know, the kind of a rough look at the job experience of state lawmakers and the executive branch and the judicial branch. And what they found, I don't know that it's necessarily a surprise, but I think illustrating it and talking about the background experience of these people who go and make these laws and these policies matters a lot. So what they found is about 75% of Republicans in Olympia have private sector job experience, compared to only 48% of Democrats. And then if you go to the executive branch, so these are, you know, your elected statewide officials, like the Secretary of State and the Lieutenant Governor and the Auditor and the Treasurer and the Governor, 20%, that's it, only 20% of the state's executive branch has any experience in the private sector, working for a business, running a business, starting a business. And then judicial, this isn't a surprise to me because I think just the nature of the job in the judicial branch, 33% have private sector job experience. So I've been thinking about that a lot, and we'll just use Bob Ferguson as an example. Because, you know, I think you have these Democrats, and we'll show it as we get into some of the background of the jobs and, you know, what sectors make up primarily the Democrats that are down there making these laws. And when you start to look at it, you're like, okay, they're advocating for what they know. They're doing what they know. And maybe it's not, I mean, it's obviously very misguided, but these are the people that voters are putting into office, and they have really limited experience outside of government, outside of the scope of government. So Bob Ferguson, he went to law school, of course. He gets out of law school, he starts clerking for federal judges. So again, that's not private sector experience. His only private sector experience was after he clerked for some judges after law school. He spent 4 years at a private law firm, just four. And then he immediately went into politics and he's never left. He went to the King County Council in 2004 after just 4 years of private sector experience. And then, of course, he was the Attorney General of the state of Washington. And then he became the governor of the state of Washington. The government is all he knows. And so he's in there growing the size of government. Well, the government is all he's known, besides just four measly years of private sector experience as a lawyer, which I don't even know how good of private sector experience that is. So there was a great thread, and I want to give credit to Engel E, at Engel E on X, and I'm going to leave the data stuff up to the data nerds who are better with it, and they've already done it, so I'm not going to go and redo it. But they said on X, we coded the primary pre-legislative career of all 147 Washington state legislators from their official biographies. The two parties have almost nothing in common occupationally. So look at some of this. So again, business, private sector, and it looks at it on a map. For Republicans, they have a ton of private sector slash business experience, and Democrats have virtually none. Attorneys, way overrepresented among Democrats. There's, and this isn't a surprise, haven't our last four governors been attorneys? Like, can we get a governor who's not an attorney? A lot of Democrats go into politics with only a background as an attorney. And then when you look at career government or career politicians, Democrats, way more of those than there are on the Republican side. Here's an interesting stat. Agriculture and farming, no Democrats. And Engel E admits that, you know, this is basically, it's based off biography, so self-published. Now, do some of these Democrats maybe have like a job from their teens in the private sector or work somewhere for a couple months in their 20s? Sure, but this is based off of what they published, what we know about them. Agriculture, farming, none of them. Is it really a surprise, the policies that they're passing, considering none of them have agricultural farming experience and they've put our farms at dead last in the nation for profitability? And then this won't surprise you. Education. Democrats way, way out there in front of Republicans for the number of people who came to Olympia with a background as an educator in K through 12 or higher education. Gee, I wonder why the teachers union is so powerful. I wonder why the teachers union is so influential. You start to see all of this make sense. Healthcare professional, SEIU, home healthcare workers, Democrats, way more Democrats come to Olympia with a healthcare professional background. Again, none of this is a surprise. Nonprofit or community organizations, grant recipients of taxpayer funds, no Republicans came to Olympia with that kind of experience. Law enforcement, military, very few Democrats with a law enforcement or military background, far more Republicans. Not a surprise. That's why they don't pass anti-public safety, anti-cop bills. Labor and union organizers, only Democrats. Again, that's why they go there and give all this grant money to the unions, why they let the unions run Olympia and all these things. A little more breakdown that I want to look at here. So as this user points out, so there's three categories where there's zero crossover, no shared experience. And I pointed them out a little bit there, but nonprofit and community organizations, zero crossover. It's all blue, no Republicans. Labor and union organizers, all Democrats, no Republicans. And agricultural farming, all Republicans, no Democrats. That makes a lot of sense for when you see the sort of look where they came from and they come to Olympia and they advocate with that singular worldview. And when it's one party in power, their worldview is all that matters. it doesn't matter the background that Republicans have, that they bring to Olympia that could, I don't know, even things out a little bit and say, hey, here I am as a Republican lawmaker sent from Eastern Washington, and I have background in agriculture, or I have background as a police officer, or I have background running a business. Can I help us make some better laws? Democrats just say, nah, we got it, we're good. And they just cut out that experience altogether. And then they point out that career politicians, those whose primary adult career was in government or political staff before the legislature, run at 19% of Democrats and only 5% of Republicans. Sorry, let's go to this one first. So the Republican caucus is dominated by two professions, business owners and farmers and ranchers. Those two categories alone account for 70% of Republican legislators. Every other profession in the single digits. The Democratic caucus has no dominant profession. Attorneys and career government political staff tie for first at 19% each, followed by educators, nonprofit workers, healthcare professionals, and labor organizers. All of that makes perfect sense when you look at the bills that they push. All of it makes perfect sense. And look, ultimately, it's up to voters, and voters are deciding that they're okay with sending 19% of lawmakers in Olympia who have their primary experience is just government work, or their primary experience is being a career politician. And they don't care to send business owners to Olympia. They don't care to send anyone with farming experience to Olympia. And they're just, so, I mean, when you look at it, it's like, okay, it's not a surprise these things are happening. But in terms of what's going on right now in Washington state, with all of the economic outlooks for our state trending downward, the single thing that I think matters most is a lack of private sector experience. They're not business owners. And a lot of them have never even worked for a privately owned business. They don't know what it's like to sign the front of a paycheck. They don't know what it's like to have regulations from the government make it more difficult to do business and to hire people. So they get there and they just don't care. They just don't care. And you have, you know, Katie Wilson, for instance. It was interesting to see how the Seattle Times framed this bye clip from her, because they framed it as a gaffe. This is from Danny Westneat with the Times. The gaffes are becoming a pattern for Seattle's new mayor. It's not a gaffe. And that's not helpful to frame it as a gaffe. It's what she really believes. It's what she really believes, that it's okay, that rich people are bad, that we're going to eat the rich. I mean, she says she doesn't even mind being called a communist. So why call it a gaffe? No, she was in at a college where the media wasn't present, probably didn't know it was going to be recorded and put online. And so she said it to a friendly audience because she believes it, not because it's a gaffe. A more seasoned politician probably would have kept that to themselves, knowing the climate that we're in, but she really believes these things. Why does she really believe these things? Again, what are they bringing to the table? Is it really such a surprise that she says stuff like that? So you've probably heard this by now. So Katie Wilson's, both of her parents are academics from the East Coast. Her father is David Sloan Wilson. He's actually a fairly well-known evolutionary biologist. In fact, Brett Weinstein, he hosts the Dark Horse podcast, he knows David Sloan Wilson somewhat. And just on his show this past week, he was talking about one of the chief worldviews that David Sloan Wilson holds about altruism and how he very clearly has passed that on to his daughter.
He's most famous for his revival of a concept called group selection, based on the idea that altruism pays in a much more general sense than evolutionary biologists typically believe. And in that context, it is fascinating that his daughter has become the mayor of Seattle and seems to have picked up the same misunderstanding, which is now being manifest in policy. Socialism and communism punish those who are productive and reward those who are lazy. And that is unstable. It is exactly this misunderstanding that undergirds socialism and communism. And it is interesting to watch the academic version of this misunderstanding flow down a lineage, to the now mayor of Seattle.
And that's why I think for me, it's hard to say, oh, it's incompetence or it's hard to continue to beat the drum of inexperience. And don't get me wrong, her lack of any sort of real world experience and her background as a Nepo baby whose parents were paying her bills up until she was elected the mayor of one of the largest cities in America, that's relevant. It's absolutely relevant for her job performance now. But more relevant, I think, is the reality that it might be embarrassing, some of the things that she's saying and some of the things that she's doing, but she actually believes them. So it's not a gaffe. It's not an accident. It's not a lack of understanding. She's not very polished, but she's pushing and saying the things she truly believes in. And yes, that's tied to this idea of socialism, the fact that she was a leech on society or her parents for a long time, but also her father's own background of believing that altruism above all else is what will lead to a good society. And all to each according to their own need, to each according to their ability. It's just she was taught it from a very young age. And ultimately, it comes down to voters and their ability, if they choose to, and we're assuming they want to. We're living in one of the most progressive places on earth. It's very possible they knew all these things about Katie Wilson. They knew she was a Nepo baby. They knew that she was a socialist slash communist. They knew that she hated rich people, and they picked her anyway. So let's push past this thing of incompetence, because it's much more nefarious than incompetence. It's a tried and true believer in socialism, communism, fumbling her way into one of the most powerful political positions in the country. And as far as what's happening at the state level in places like Washington and California, this is a result of the type of people and their backgrounds who are being elected. They don't have private sector experience, and they don't care to hear from those with private sector experience because they're representing the interests from whence they came. The labor, the teachers, the community organizations, and for people like Bob Ferguson, government. His only true experience on this planet is being a government bureaucrat. And I think that shows in what he's done in his first year and a half in office. All right, I'm leaving the best Katie Wilson clip, the new clip. I think we have now a competitor to the goodbye clip that also we could laugh it off and say it's inexperience, but it's much, much deeper than that. And I think it has roots in communism, and that is her treatment of the press and how she deals with hard questions. We'll talk about that coming up next. First, a whole bunch of you had taken the First Mark Challenge over the last 3 years and are now saving hundreds, if not thousands of dollars a year on your insurance. You're welcome for recommending them, although I think all the thanks goes to the wonderful team at First Mark Insurance. One of the best things about First Mark is the communication. You're not going to get some phone tree. You're not going to talk to some person from another country or another place on the planet. You're going to talk to people right here in your own community. And also, if you get your business insurance through First Mark, you're working with a local business who's also going through all the things that you're going through as a local business. And so they certainly know, you know, I think from on a very personal level, how important it is to cut costs right now. So whether you get your personal insurance through First Mark or your business insurance through First Mark, I have them handle both of my needs. So does Nicole. I would recommend starting by taking the First Mark Challenge. And that is just giving them an opportunity to earn your business, to earn your business. Go to them, say, hey, look over my insurance. They'll go out, shop the market of carriers for you, come back with their recommendations. And they might save you thousands of dollars a year. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. And that is going to be very obvious from your very first interaction with them. All right, everyone. No gifts? No gifts for me? I haven't seen any gifts come through. There weren't gifts at my doorstep when I came in because it is National World Press Freedom Day. And as a member of the press, I would have assumed that you would have given me some gifts, but no such luck. That's okay. Your viewership is all the gift I need. But it's very interesting to watch Democrats celebrate and note World Press Freedom Day and, of course, talk about all the damage that Donald Trump has done to press freedom and the First Amendment while ignoring their own damage to press freedom and the First Amendment. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. That's okay. You can send me my gifts for World Press Freedom Day tomorrow. I'll accept them a day late. All right. So Democrats in Congress talking about World Press Freedom Day. Here's Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal of Washington State. Today is World Press Freedom Day. The U.S. is now ranked 57th in the world for press freedom. Yeah, I'm sure. And that is rapidly declining as Trump continues to attack journalism. Democracy needs a strong, free press to survive. I would really like to know what countries 1 through 56 are. Give me a break. Adam Smith, similar sentiments. Today marks World Press Freedom Day, a time to honor independent journalism. Oh, and the protections under the First Amendment. As this president threatens to take away our access to reliable information and public trust, we must continue to push for more transparency and access to the news. Now, I am totally in support of more press freedom, not less. I think I'm uniquely positioned to criticize what they're saying there because I have also criticized the president for some of the actions he's taken that have served to limit press freedom, like his attack on the Associated Press for not calling the Gulf of America the Gulf of America, things like that, Jim Acosta press pass. I even spoke out against their arrest of Don Lemon, as much as it got me criticized by some of you. So I think when it comes to press freedom, I'm always very consistent on that issue, whether I like the messenger or don't like the messenger. But of course, I saw those two posts today and I thought, well, geez, Congressman Adam Smith, a friend of this show, we've had him on. I think he's a fairly reasonable man. I can't recall, have I missed it? Have I missed him coming to my defense over Democrats in Washington State blocking my press credential and blocking the press credential of several other independent journalists who they deem too conservative or too politically active or opinionated? Have I missed Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, who I've always had a perfectly cordial relationship with, coming to my defense at any point in the last few years, saying, hey, you know, if we're going to criticize President Donald Trump cracking down on journalists he doesn't like or he thinks are too far left, well, then I've got to be morally consistent and I've got to say that even though Brandy's sometimes hard on me, we can't literally make her go through a legal battle funded by the taxpayers of the state of Washington, as the state of Washington, as we speak, continues to fight us on our press pass lawsuit. So I guess, you know, again, moral consistency is really not a hard thing. It's not a difficult thing to do. You just decide what's important to you, where your morality is, and then no matter the political implications, you set it and you stay the course. And that's why on press freedom I'm so consistent. And I just think it's fascinating that you have these Democrats blaming President Trump, and I'm not saying he's without criticism on the press freedom issue, and totally ignoring that back in their home states, Democrats are doing the same thing, if not worse, to conservative journalists who they don't like in Washington state. So it's not too late, Congressman Smith, Congresswoman Jayapal, I welcome you. I welcome you to the fight. And if you want to make some calls to your friends in Olympia to get them to back off, I would not say no to that. But speaking of press freedom, I think there are multiple ways to chill press freedom in the United States of America. You can, you know, block access and revoke press passes and say, you're not a journalist, you can't come in, you can't ask questions of people in power. And then I think there's, you know, not answering questions when they're posed of you or doing everything you can to avoid answering questions. In fact, there was just an article in Axios today where, and I give Melissa Santos with Axios a lot of credit. She was criticizing Governor Ferguson for not once since he's been elected in 16 months has he had a general press conference with the media. And she points out that previous governors did this. And when it comes to governors and accessibility to the media, he's like at the bottom. He's just not being accessible whatsoever. So that's one way to chill the press, is to just not make yourself available to the press. And even if you like or don't like Donald Trump, you can't deny he's about as accessible as it gets. I mean, apparently reporters just call him at all hours of the day and he just picks up the phone for him. And he has untold numbers of press conferences, probably too many, if we're being honest. So that's one way to chill it. And you can do also what Seattle Mayor Katie Wilson does. Set the agenda and say, I will appear in front of you, peons, but you are not allowed to ask me anything, any questions, except the questions that I deem are appropriate. So there was a clip that has been going crazy, even crazier than Katie Wilson waving bye to the millionaires. It's with Chris Daniels of Como News in Seattle. This is, and I like Chris, he does a great job. So he's at a press conference about some other random thing. And like any good reporter, you're going to ask whatever you want. You probably have a story you're working on for the day. You're just looking for an opportunity to get the mayor on the record. So yeah, you'll go to some dumb press conference she has for an opportunity to do that. Now, a little bit of context here. Last week, there were shots fired outside a press conference where Seattle Mayor Katie Wilson was. There's no indication she was targeted. It's just a high crime area of the city. So Chris Daniels wanted to ask her about, you know, how she's doing, if she's shaken up, but also if it changes her perception on some of the video monitoring that has become all of a sudden so controversial that she and others on the left kind of want to do away with that could help reduce instances of crime. Here's what happened.
How do you feel after Tuesday, after what happened, what transpired?
I'm doing great. You know, got a great team supporting me. And I'll just say, you know, we don't have any indication that that shooting was targeted or anything like that.
And the last question would be related to that, that, you know, I talked to people in that neighborhood who said that.
Hold on.
It's just one last question. People in that community who are concerned that there's been rising gun violence and that there should be more surveillance cameras and that kind of thing. That's obviously been an issue that you weighed in on. Does that change it? Does that change your perspective at all?
Let's keep it on. Yeah, let's keep it on the topic. Thanks.
But does that change your perspective at all?
Appreciate
it, but let's keep it on topic.
Okay. She's about to answer the question, though. Okay. I mean, it looks worse when you jump in like that.
I'm sorry. I specifically said to keep it on topic today.
Okay. Yeah. But I also have to ask the questions that people want to have answered.
Maybe we can set up a different time for that.
But the mayor's a busy person.
Government handler, I specifically said, I instructed you, member of the media, to keep it on topic. And this just continues to go. Let's keep playing it. It just continues. It's so embarrassing. And good for Chris Daniels and Como for keeping the camera rolling.
Maybe we can set up with Sage.
Yeah,
just in
Sage.
Well, Sage hasn't returned phone calls all week, so.
It's been a busy week, but
watch.
I will definitely get with Sage. Yeah.
Watch
We're
Chris.
Just trying to keep it in the scope and respect the event itself. If that makes sense.
And they're all standing around doing nothing.
Well, you can respect what I'm doing.
Just watch Chris.
Your job is to ask questions. It's our job to
We just need to keep it within the constraints of the
event. She's just standing there.
Appreciate it.
I'll talk to Sage.
Watch his look toward the camera.
Thanks, Chris.
How embarrassing.
Okay.
Watch the look he gives the camera.
Were you going to talk to Andrew?
I already did.
And they're just standing there. They have time to answer questions.
4 minutes, so.
He says, we have 4 minutes. We have 4 minutes. We're just going to stand here rather than just answer a simple question that would have been done. That would have been done. There was a shooting outside a press conference. Totally legitimate question. There was a shooting outside a press conference you were at. Yet you want to do it the way with the CCTV that helps fight crime. And she can't answer it. Totally legitimate question. Not even a hard question to answer. And for the handler to come and say, I specifically told you to keep it on topic. Now, you can say that there's some sort of inexperience there, and I think that that's probably true. But also, remember what we started the show talking about. This is her worldview. She's a socialist / communist, admittedly so. She wants, what do socialists and communists want? What is the reality of the press in socialist and communist countries? It's state-run media. So she and the people around her believe that they can tell the media, this is what you can ask about and this is what you can't ask about. Her handlers believe he can say to Chris Daniels, I specifically told you what you were allowed to ask questions about, because that is their worldview. That's ideal to them. And here on World Press Freedom Day, you've got Democrats talking about how bad Trump is for press freedom. Now, eventually, this is fascinating. Eventually, Katie Wilson, Mayor Wilson, came back to answer this question for Chris Daniels, and all of a sudden she has a polished answer for it.
Does your perspective change at all based on what you went through Tuesday night?
Not really. I mean, I believe that CCTV cameras have an important role to play in our public safety system, and we also have to be very careful to make sure that our data storage, security, sharing practices don't make that system vulnerable to misuse and abuse, whether that's by federal immigration enforcement or by other bad actors.
Yeah, so here's what they did. They took her aside. They practiced the response that she was going to give, again, a little of that inexperience there, until it was how they wanted it to be. And then they went back to Chris and they said, okay, she'll answer your question now, probably because they also understood how bad it looked or how bad it would look, especially if he was still rolling, which he was. I'm glad for that. But also, it's not the first time Katie has done this. On the show in just the past few weeks, we've had multiple examples of her picking and choosing who to answer questions from, her saying you can't ask questions that are off topic, or her fleeing press conferences before reporters even got to ask questions.
Just your thoughts about it, and is there any concern about other businesses leaving?
Because this is a big Starbucks in Seattle.
This is, again, not the subject of our press conference.
Oh. I'm just wondering what happened to the mayor. Where'd she go?
She had to go. She is so busy. She's the mayor.
John, I'm not doing it on the record with you, Jonathan.
I don't understand. You answered all of the questions. Why can't you answer mine?
Because you're not a member of the media, Jonathan.
There's video evidence of rampant drug use inside tiny house villages. First of all, are you aware of that?
Do you have another question, sir?
So I just wanted to know how much longer you plan on sweeping, or if anything is going to change from the Herald administration. Do you have any comment on that, Mayor? Thoughts?
I laugh, but that's terrifying. And again, don't just chalk it up to inexperience. Don't just chalk it up to she doesn't know how to answer the questions, so she's trying to avoid answering the questions. The most obvious explanation is she believes the society she wants is a socialist communist society. The only models we have for how the press is allowed to operate in socialist communist societies are state-run media. And so that is her worldview, that she as the mayor gets to dictate what the media asks her, when they ask her it, and who gets to ask her questions. It is terrifying that that woman is in charge of a major city in America, and that it's not a one-off, that this is New York City, maybe soon to be LA, the mindset of the leadership. So for the people celebrating World Press Freedom Day, if you really care about press freedom, then you should care about it when it's under attack, no matter the political party that's trying to weaken it. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. How much would you pay for a signed copy of the Constitution? Who signed it, you ask? Governor Bob Ferguson. What would such a gem be worth to you? We'll discuss coming up next. I know the answer. Literally nothing. I would pay someone to take it away and out of my sight. First, if you're thinking about leaving the state of Washington, I don't blame you. I hope you'll stay and fight. But if you've just had enough, I got a video from a family over the weekend, picture of their U-Haul leaving the house that they raised their kids in, heading to Arizona. They've had enough. And Wes Jones says he's had a lot of people reaching out to him to sell their homes because they're moving out of state. Some of them moved out of state and sold their homes after they left. They're like, we can't wait. So if you're thinking about moving across the country or just across the street, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. He gets a ton of great reviews, understandably so. Evan says, this was a tough multifamily transaction with a buyer who was often unreasonable and difficult. Wes stayed professional, kept the deal together, and pushed it to the finish line when it could have easily blown up. That takes his experience and grit. I appreciate the effort and look forward to the next deal. So go from Sell with Wes to Sold with Wes. Go to his website, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, and you can see some of his current listings that he's been able to sell for his clients, see the results he's been able to get. I think right now with this rapidly changing housing market we have, because, you know, a bunch of people are selling their homes and getting the hell out of here, I would recommend asking Wes off the bat for a free market analysis so you can understand, you know, how much the listings on the market have grown, what that can mean for the time it'll take to sell your home, how much you can expect to get for your home, etc. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, I think we have a double dose of unbelievable today. Let's get to it. Okay, over the weekend, the Thurston County Democratic Party had their second annual Blue Gala, a moment of challenge and resolve, it says. The Blue Gala recognizes Washington State Democrats and local leaders at a time when the country faces serious and sobering challenges. Amid growing concerns about federal overreach and threats to our democratic institutions, this gathering is an opportunity to come together with purpose and determination. We take pride in our social local successes without losing sight of the work still before us. I don't know why. I just want to read it in that accent. So Governor Bob Ferguson was there, and in fact, he offered quite the item to help the Thurston County Democratic Party raise money. A signed copy of the Constitution. Months after he signed no fewer than 5 blatantly unconstitutional laws, he offers, it's almost like he's trolling us. All these things, I think he has to be trolling us. It says, receive a signed copy of the United States Constitution from our very own Governor Bob Ferguson. You'll take home your copy with a personal message from the 24th Governor of Washington. What was it worth? Vonnie T. paid $175 for it. Vonnie T. You know what I want to do? I want to, just to troll the governor, auction off a signed copy of the Constitution that I signed, and just to see if we can sell it for more than $175, we'll do it for some sort of charity. I feel like since me signing the Constitution isn't like, you know, a whore in church, I feel like it will go, I mean, you know what I mean? It's like a sinner catching fire in church. No, I actually like the Constitution. You know, I gave Nick Brown a copy of the Constitution. Remember when he was in here? He was running for attorney general. We were sitting right over there.
I do remember.
Before he ended the interview, I said, can I give you a gift? And I gave him a copy of the Constitution. He said, you're acting like you don't think I have one. And I said, I think if you do, I don't think you've read it. But anyway, we'll do that. We'll find a charity. I'll do a signed copy of the Constitution, and we'll see if we can sell it for more than $175. So, good times. All right, let's get to our second edition of Unbelievable. Although, you know, maybe there'd be some funny irony in having that. Like, wouldn't that be a funny thing to display? Like, how hilarious is this? Look at this gag gift. It's a copy of the Constitution signed by Bob Ferguson. Anyway, I wanted to update you guys on something, a little follow-up edition of Unbelievable. Remember this past week, the women's soccer team at the University of Washington was scheduled to play Crossfire U14, a team made up of prepubescent boys. And the point I made was, well, of course, you'd never have the UW men's soccer team play 13 and 14-year-old girls, and we all know why, and we are not going to, nobody's pretending that that would be a good idea, but you have those people who pretend that boys are the same as girls, and it's perfectly fine if biological males play against girls because, oh my gosh, they don't have any sort of physical advantage. Well, this just tells on yourselves, because why would you have adult women play preteen boys? Now, I looked everywhere. I had somebody message me like, hey, Brandy, can you find the score of this game? Because it was last like Wednesday or Thursday, I think. And UW didn't publish it. I could find the score of this game literally nowhere. And immediately I'm like, oh, it's because the girls lost. It's because the women's team lost. But they didn't publish it anywhere. I looked at all the social media, on the website, the athletic department, everything. And I couldn't find the score of a game they played. So I found one random user on Instagram called Woodwork Seattle, who apparently attended this game, and he put out a bunch of video from it. And there it is, 2-1. The boys beat the women. It's not a surprise. It's not a surprise. The women's team, according to this one user, the only person brave enough to publish the score, 2-1.
They weren't really trying, Brandy.
Oh, they weren't trying. Yeah, they wanted to let the boys win.
Why would?
Yeah, of course, of course.
If that's the excuse, which it was last time. Why would you play then? Because isn't that an insult?
Right, because they're saying that they play these elite teams
for practice.
For boys, for practice. And the only way if you're going to get better is if you play somebody better than you. Mm-hmm. So they must think there's a chance they're better than them and they can help them sharpen their skills. So yeah, 13 and 14-year-old boys beat the UW women's soccer team because why? Boys have a biological advantage to girls. And that's why we're going to pass the initiative in November prohibiting boys from competing in girls' sports. It's common sense. We'll get to national news coming up next. I'm glad that the women lost, because or else I would have had to eat a little crow. But yes, I'm glad the women lost. All right. Most investors right now are focused on AI, crypto, tech. But our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital thinks the real story is happening somewhere else. Energy. Iran, you've been driving by gas stations lately? Yeah. So is your current advisor underestimating energy's impact on your portfolio? I saw, because Zach manages my money, and I saw a bunch of trades going on around energy. I was like, he's on it. Join Bulwark Capital Zach Abraham for his free Impact of Energy live webinar. It's happening May 21st at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. He'll explain how every market is driven by energy, the impact energy has on inflation, and how that could potentially affect your retirement plan is going to be a key focus of the webinar. Plus, he'll do a full reveal, as always, of how Bulwark is focused on risk management, always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So join Zach's Impact of Energy webinar May 21st at 3:30 p.m. Pacific. It's totally free. Register now. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. And while you're there, subscribe to Zach's daily podcast on YouTube, anywhere really. You can just search Know Your Risk Podcast. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. All right. Some national news with a little bit of a local peg. So we talked last week about how the feds decided they're going to start intervening in these street level attacks by Antifa or left wing extremists, or hopefully even right wing extremists, on independent journalists. I don't care who it is. If you're using violence or vandalism to carry out a political or social agenda, then yes, you belong behind a jail cell or in a federal prison. So, but it just so happens that right now there aren't right wingers roaming the country assaulting journalists. It's left wingers. So it happened with the Cervana Hernandez case, where there were federal indictments against three people who attacked her outside an ICE facility in Minneapolis. And I said, okay, let's see what the feds do from here. So this is a hard to watch video, just because I guess we personally know Katie Davis Court. And also having been in these situations, it is hard to watch. It's hard to watch a woman or anyone treated like this. But Katie was covering the May Day riot outside the Portland ICE facility. And I'll say that Katie knows that she's a target. She's been assaulted numerous times covering the actions outside that facility for almost a year now. And so she usually goes undercover and she tries to hide her identity, because if she doesn't, she'll be down there for 5 seconds before they out her and her life is in danger. So she goes to great lengths to try to be able to do her job, which is so sad that she can't go down there without hiding her face as a journalist in the United States of America. But even so, she was outed, and here's what followed.
You don't know who you are? Huh? Oh, shit. You like pedophiles? You into that shit?
Look at what you're doing here.
You come back, you dumb
All right, so I'm pretty sure I'm in danger. And I am going to leave. I just got assaulted.
Rock thrown at her.
They just threw a rock in my face. Okay.
Running for her life.
Yeah! Yeah!
Okay, so that
one
just
threw
a rock
chase her.
In my face.
No! Get the f*** out of here!
Stop!
No!
Okay. I'm in serious danger. I'm in danger!
She sees some Portland police officers.
I'm a journalist. I'm in danger.
Two of them start to ride away.
I'm in danger.
Good grief.
I'm in danger.
And I think maybe because she was covered, like,
I just got assaulted really bad.
She didn't realize who she was at first, but.
I'm a journalist. I'm reporting undercover. And Tifa just threw a rock in my face.
Did it hit you?
Yes. I have it on camera.
You have it on camera?
And they just threw it out, or they just assaulted me. They threw a rock in my face, hit my nose.
So they're screaming traitor.
And yeah, they were screaming.
You have it on video?
Yeah.
Can you try to pull it up so I can see it?
Yeah, it's on this live stream.
Gosh, I just, it makes me so mad every time. I just want to go punch people in the throat. But I am not a violent person, unlike them. So she got hit with a rock in the face. And you might remember when she and I went to the White House last fall, she had a black eye from getting hit with a metal pole in the face down the same place. So it was like, okay, what's going to happen now? Because what you saw there, unlike what happened with Savannah Hernandez, is that the people who did that, the actual assaults, were head to toe in black block, with only the slits of their eyeballs showing. Very difficult to identify. Well, the Department of Justice immediately said, were on it. They said an investigation has been launched after Katie shared the video saying it's impossible for me to do my job down at the Portland ICE facility, even with security. I was violently mobbed out by Antifa and a suspect in Black Bloc threw a rock at my face. I have zero desire to discuss this further, but everyone is tired of it and wondering why a crackdown on Antifa, a terror organization, has not yet occurred. So DOJ says they're looking into it. I've said all along, if they can track down every single individual who was at January 6th at the Capitol and have the FBI knocking on doors years later because they used the, they basically drew a big circle and found all the cell phones in that area. If they can use the FBI in that way, they can do the exact same thing at these riots. And I will say, though, and I think this is in part because the federal government has said, okay, we're going to get involved in these street level crimes. Some of the other videos shows Portland police being far more hands on than they've been outside the ICE facility in the past, like actually going in, effecting arrests. There was another more of a content creator who was assaulted and Portland police already identified a suspect in that case. So they're doing that. But do I think that Portland police have the ability to identify or the tools at their disposal to identify a rioter in Black Bloc? Probably not. So I think federal law enforcement has more tools in that regard to be able to track and trace these people. So we'll see. This is a huge test. It's one thing for the feds to charge people who'd already been identified and attack Savannah Hernandez, you know, with their faces shown on camera. It's another thing entirely to try to find these black-clad Antifa terrorists and bring them to justice. Like the person who tried to blind me with wasp killer outside the ICE facility last year, face totally covered. Local police just didn't have the ability to identify who that person was. So we're hoping for some justice for Katie. I did check in on her to see how she's doing. It's just awful. And you can't do your job without, even if you go undercover, you can't do your job. This is the United States of America, speaking of press freedom. Where are the Democrats on that? All right, San Francisco's mayor, he's really turned out to be a good one, hasn't he? Mayor Daniel Leary. So he has come out and he, and look, when I say a good one, like semi-sane, saying very simple things that shouldn't be controversial to say. This is the headline from NBC Bay Area. San Francisco pilots new public drug enforcement approach. Oh my God, new? It's like brand new idea. Let's enforce drug laws. And that's why I say, like, I like to hear this. This is a good thing. But they should have been doing this all along. And they never should have stopped enforcing drug laws. It says San Francisco's experiment with a new approach to public drug use and addiction starts Monday at the RESET Center, which stands for Rapid Enforcement Support Evaluation and Triage. It says under this pilot program, people found publicly using drugs or intoxicated in the neighborhood will be arrested and brought there until they sober up. Then they'll be offered the option to connect with treatment upon release. Lots of anticipation and questions are swirling in the city ahead of the opening of this center. Wow, what a concept. You arrest them, you bring them there to sober up, and it's like either you're going to jail or you're going to get help, and you're going to get help now. So here's San Francisco Mayor Daniel Leary talking about this.
We are no longer going to tolerate people using drugs on our streets. I'm not going to tolerate it as a father, and I'm not going to tolerate it as the mayor.
Is that really so hard? And it was like, my first reaction was to celebrate it. Be like, oh my gosh, awesome. No, that's the bare minimum. We never should have been saying anything different. And so it's like, I'm not gonna celebrate you. I'm glad that you're at this place of sanity, but we never should have left it. Here is the Department of Public Health Director, David Tsai, laying out some of the resources that are gonna be offered in this center.
There will be 24/7 nursing here. There will be social worker access. There will be peer support, meaning people with lived experience helping to motivate and work with individuals here to get them connected to treatment and to services. Treatment for their drug use will not be compulsory or mandatory, but the goal is to make sure that there are folks with lived experience helping to motivate somebody to get connected to treatment.
All right, we were almost there. Not quite there yet. You have to make it compulsory. You have to make it mandatory. We're never going to get out of this because when you're in that mindset, you're never going to be like, you know what? Yeah, today is the day. I'm ready to stop using fentanyl. You're just not going to do it. Every person we've ever talked to on this show who used to be a drug addict said it was jail that got him clean. And that's just what it is. And so they were almost there. the whole lived experience thing. No, you're almost there. Now let's make it compulsory and let's get them the treatment they need. Although I'm glad they're saying that it's going to be staffed 24 hours a day, because a while ago, this is probably 2 years ago, we did a story on this. I don't know what they like termed it. I don't think it was like a safe consumption site, but kind of like that in the Tenderloin District in San Francisco. They just wanted to get the druggies off the street and put them in this fenced off area, like out of sight, out of mind. And there were some independent journalists who pretended to be druggies, and they'd go in and they'd get this bag full of all the stuff they needed to do their drugs, you know, per the usual. And there was no staff in there. There wasn't nurses. There wasn't law enforcement. It was just like, come inside this gate and do your drugs here, so you're not filthing up the street. So this is better than that, for sure. All right, we'll get to our daily subscriber show poll, comments from the live stream coming up next. First, if you are a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, things are difficult right now, no doubt. I hear from landlords and housing providers all the time. That's why you need someone in your corner to help you navigate the constantly changing rules and regulations. RHAWOD.org is that organization. They are Washington's trusted resource empowering housing providers. They've been wonderful advertisers on the show for about 3 years now, and we really believe in the work that they're doing. So not only do they help you on an individual basis, and it can be things as simple as screening forms and making sure you're up to date on all the forms that you need as a housing provider, but also they're out there advocating on your behalf. We talked last week about this huge property rights lawsuit that they're spearheading that could totally be an upheaval for all the bad landlord-tenant laws that have been passed in recent years. So go to RHAWOD.org, RHAWOD.org, Washington's trusted resource empowering housing providers. All right, I asked you in our daily subscriber-only show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X, do you believe the decline of West Coast economies is intentional or incompetence? And look, I understand there's probably a mix of the two of them, but pick which one you think is more true. Nicole, intentional or just incompetence?
Well, I'm going to go with intentional, because I don't know how you watch people deteriorate the way they are in Seattle and and do nothing about it, or like make it easier for them to do so.
Yeah.
So to me, that has to be intentional. You can't allow people to do drugs like that and think that it's going to somehow better their life.
Yeah. And I don't know that intentional has to be malicious, where you're like, I'm going to ruin the whole economy and make people more reliant on government. But when you are passing a policy and you know what the consequence of that policy will be, but you do it anyway, that's intentional. That's not incompetent. So like you said, when you're allowing open air drug use, you know what that's going to lead to.
Yep.
But because you're so woke, your ideology demands that you do it anyway and you never back down from it.
Mm-hmm.
That is intentional. Incompetence is like, oh, I don't know how to run the government, you know?
And again, Katie telling millionaires buy, they take their money with them. So how do you not how do you not think that's intentional if she knows they're taking their money with them?
Yes. So you guys disagree with us. 54% of you say, Brandy, that is incompetence. Mm-hmm. Tony says intentional, but due to misjudgment. The quantity of fools who applaud and say good riddance when companies and high earners announce their departure has resulted in the Democrats having inverted incentives. Get votes by catering to the most economically illiterate social media fanatics, because remember, holding office is a short-term goal and accomplishment. The impact in the long term doesn't matter to them. That was like Jay Inslee passing all his climate goals. He was never going to be around when the deadline came and went and they realized the climate goals were impossible. Mm-hmm. So he's like, let's just do this because it sounds good. And I mean, he'll be, you know, probably not on this earth anymore when the goals, because he's fairly old, right? And so he'll never have to own up to the fact that he'd forced all of this upon us. Julie says intentional. They want the land, buildings, and control of the people. Mm-hmm. Ray says, I suspect incompetence, but to quote a famous orator, what difference at this point does it make? True. That's very true. The result is the same. Scott from Snohomish, nobody that can get into leadership positions, well, other than the Seattle mayor, can be that stupid and keep their job. Chasing out the high earners increases the liberal voter percentage. Those people care way more about remaining in power than about their constituents. And I don't know about that. One of the things that bothers me, so we were having a little discussion last night about whether we should ask Sandeep Kashyap to come on the show today. So Sandeep's a Democrat political strategist, but he's more of a sane Democrat. Like, he's willing to call out bad policy. But he was saying something online about, oh, the right-wing meltdown over what Katie Wilson said. It's not right-wing. Some of these people who are leaving, like Jesse Proudman, the AI innovator, he's voted for Democrats, okay? He's not right-wing. So chalking it up to right-wing totally diminishes the reality of the situation, because then it makes it right versus left when it's not. It's sane versus insane. So I'm going to have a little conversation with Sandy. Sandy, I'm calling you today on my drive home.
Well,
and I'm going to tisk you.
It takes people on the right to point it out,
right?
Because that seems to be something the left is willing to cover up. But
well, they're just not as willing to call out. And
the
right's like this too. You're not as willing to call out members of your own party or ideology, or you don't want to be attacked or whatever it is. But yeah, at this point, sane Democrats need to come forward and say, no, this isn't a right wing thing. Because are you saying that demanding good economic policy is right wing? Is that the admission that you're making, that it's right wing to say it's insane to scare job creators and wealth out of your state? Because that's almost an admission for you to say that, oh, yeah, that's a right wing stance.
And stop supporting the people that are pushing these policies.
So bad. You look so tan right now. I'm so jealous. Look at you.
Well, my burn faded.
Oh, good. I'm back to being pale. All of 1 week. All right. On the Dems lacking private sector experience, Matthew Cook says people with little to no private sector experience making policies that impact the private sector. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that there isn't a place in Olympia for a robust set of experiences. I don't mind that there's educators down there. I don't mind that there's former union laborers. I don't mind that. But it's the outsized type. It's the amount of career politicians, the amount of that is a scary percentage of people making policy that have no private sector experience.
And if you were willing to surround yourself and
listen
to people with that experience, it would be another thing. But they don't. They
absolutely
actively.
Yeah.
Do the opposite.
D-Man in Seattle, all the Democrat professions feed off taxpayers and or the government. Lawyers sue the government, nonprofits get government grants, etc. Yeah, and when Bob did have those 4 years of private sector experience, it's like suing the government, right? It was like, you know. Kathleen, when you own a business, make payroll, pay a variety of taxes, etc., you see the world differently than someone who has not. And you value money a little bit differently, I think.
Yeah.
And you know the difference between a good investment and a bad investment. And yeah, it's a
and how hard all of these things are. All of this, like, even just being a contractor employee, I mean, any of these things are, they're hard. They're hard to figure out. They're hard to do. And I feel like there's zero respect for the people that take that on to employ people to just grow the economy.
Well, you have to make decisions that work for the bottom line, right? And when they don't work for the bottom line, when you're in the private sector, you immediately have to backtrack because or else you'll go out of business. Think about now the government. They don't have to do that. Think about how many policies they push that they do not achieve the intended result. Mm-hmm. There's no, you don't double check to make sure that the money is well spent. You don't double check to make sure the money fulfilled the intended purpose because it's not your money. And so that explains perfectly the difference and the disconnect that Democrats are seeing in Olympia. Good point. Seattle mayor continues to fail. Crafty Grandma Crispy, her lack of experience makes her more vulnerable to bad ideology. She's 44 years old. She might be 45 by now. There's no excuse for being like, oh, I'm so influenced by the world around me. I'm sorry. I'm not saying you can't and shouldn't change your perspective when presented with new information. But by the time you're 44, like, you should have your own values and ideas and morality and all that stuff.
She knows exactly what she's doing.
She does. Let's see. Late Night with Tina. The real truth is that they do not live the life they want to force on the little people. You know, the people who actually work and own the businesses that provide their power. Right. Michelle Seberg, I would argue pure altruism does not exist. It's a false premise because even warm and fuzzy feelings have an element of self-interest. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Doing it to make yourself feel good, you know?
Yeah.
True. On Dems celebrating Free Press Day, Big Princess, $20 super chat. Thank you. My gift to Brandy on World Press Freedom Day. Thank you. Your friendship and your paid subscription are the only gifts I need. Dirk Diggler, their arrogance is only eclipsed by their ignorance. Tanya Butterton, a true commie doesn't feel they owe the population an explanation. Yes, but that's the thing is they really don't. On Ferguson signing the Constitution, I don't give a chuck. Sponsoring the Boop and contributing to Brandy's journalism on World Press Freedom Day. Thank you. Wah up. It didn't immediately burst into flames when he signed it. That's what I was thinking, too. Is like, now that book is sitting in this guy's house cursed. It's cursed. It's a cursed copy of the Constitution.
Like, I'm signing this because I believe what I believe. It means
my interpretation of the Constitution. Of what he should have done is go through there and cross out all the lines he doesn't personally agree with. Right. And then said, this is my version of the Constitution. Well, Eric, Brandy, it looks like the Washington Supreme Court has rejected the referendum for the state income tax. We'll talk about that a little more in depth tomorrow for sure. Mm-hmm. John Thomas, I actually agree with undoing the surveillance state. Repeal the Patriot Act. No more speed, red light cameras, license plate readers. The California Tech Union named the fool Teach of the Month again in solidarity. I don't know what that means. But I understand that actually a surveillance state is, I think, has cross-party criticism for sure. I mean, I don't want to live in a surveillance state. I got mailed a ticket. It was like a warning or something. It was a warning from a speed camera in a work zone. And I don't remember it saying speed camera. I'm sure it did or something. And I was like going like 9 miles an hour over or something like that. I can't remember. And it's just a warning because like your first offense is a warning. But I shouldn't admit to that because now you guys are like, Brandy, you really have a speed problem. No, I know. But I was like annoyed. I'm like, how is that okay? I don't like this. I don't like the cameras. It's like, no, you enforce it upon me. I'm not having some camera enforce the law on me. But with some of this surveillance stuff, when you have, I'm torn on it. Uh-huh. Because when you have police departments like Seattle that are so short-staffed, it's like, well, we got to fill in the gap somewhere. And I mean, one, the arrest they made of the chick in my assault from last June, she was caught because of the Flock camera system. Mm-hmm. They were able to track her movements back from where she was. So if you can solve murders and rapes or whatever it is, I'm okay with Flock as long as there are some privacy protections in place.
I do think it's been used a little ridiculously. So I was just talking to somebody who got a ticket for speeding in a school zone.
Okay.
But the video, because they post the video of her driving through it, and the video clearly shows that it's not like the school zone time frame or whatever. Like it mistook her camera,
it was like an AI whatever. Thing. Yeah.
Anyway, so she called and she said, hey, it's obviously not the school zone or time frame or whatever. And they said, sorry, you have to go in and fight it. So she had to go through the whole process and see a judge. She had to talk to a judge on Zoom or whatever to be like, here's the video. It's obviously not
a
school
zone.
And then they send it out. What a waste of resources, right? Why can't you just call and say, hey, you can clearly see.
Yeah.
And the person originally she talked to said, yeah, I can see that. But you still have to go to a judge.
Yeah, that's annoying. I mean, there are human beings who make those mistakes too, who are like, oh, no, you were speeding. You're like, no, I wasn't. You got to go take it to court to fight it. But to your point, it should be easier to dismiss. All right. Nicole, thank you. We'll get to our closing sanity check. I really like this. As much as I criticized Congressman Adam Smith on the show today for failing to stand up for all press freedom, he had some very sane remarks about education and the fact that there are some deep red southern states who are doing a much better job on education than Democrats are in states like Washington.
What are you doing with the money that you have? All right, to try to actually improve things. And when you look at the models down in Mississippi, Louisiana, and Alabama, there's a lot of focus on how they teach reading, you know, rote learning, phonics, a bunch of stuff goes over my head. And that's fine. You can do it in a bunch of different ways. Really, what those states did is they set standards and they expected results and they held people accountable for reaching those results. It's not complicated. Eliminating standards is not equity. We need to have standards and help students get to those standards. And I think those states have begun to strike the right balance. You know, 20, 25 years ago, when a lot of people fell in love with the idea that we needed a lot of testing, you can go too far in that regard. And then we set up this ridiculous thing where if you don't pass the test, we're going to give you less money. We're going to punish you, basically. I think they've struck a balance. They help the schools get there, but they hold them accountable for getting there. And the other big thing, aside from standards, is attendance. They have found that truancy is a major, major problem in having successful K-12 education systems. So they set goals and they put in place various different efforts to make sure the students show up.
Is he right wing? Because that's what we say all the time, and they call us right wing for it. And look, I appreciate that he's being honest about the success that deep red states have had in education. But I think it's like, okay, well, what what are you going to do to hold our state accountable then? You're the congressman, you're a congressman from Washington State. Your party is in charge of our education system. And to your point, they don't have standards that they're actually holding students to. Truancy is no big deal. Disciplinary issues are no big deal because, oh, it's racist or whatever it is to actually enforce those things. So I appreciate the compliments for the red states that are seeing improvements. But what are you going to do to hold our own state accountable and your own party accountable for their failures here? That has been our closing sanity check. A reminder, we're still running our once yearly promo. We only do it one time a year, so we'll be running it for about a month, and you get 30% off an entire year of Undivided. Go to patreon.com/undivided. That's patreon.com/undivided. Use the promo code USA30, and it takes the cost, the monthly cost down to like, I don't know, $4, $4.50, something like that. I can't do the 30%. $3 and something cents. Look, 30% off $5, okay? It's $5 a month, 30% off, but you can do it for an entire year. That's the best way to use the promo, I think, is get 30. What did you say, Nicole? Did you use a calculator?
I did.
What does it say?
3.5.
Three? God, we're not. Look, maths is not a strength of mine. $3.50. You're not paying us to do math, okay? Anyway, so sign up, use that promo before it's gone. USA 30. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here on this Monday. Thank you, even though it's so beautiful out. Oh my gosh, gorgeous day in the Pacific Northwest. So now that the show's over, get outside. Fresh air. Sunshine. Vitamin, is it B or D?
D.
D, vitamin D. Obviously, I don't know. Look at me. I'm not sure which one it is. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. We'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.